land is your land. This land is my land. From California.
This has been such a hugely consequential week, and a week in which we are all talking about finding a way to come together to understand that we can work together, black and white law enforcement citizens out there. And I couldn't think of a better way to make that point than to open today's show with Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings singing Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land. We have so much to talk about in this week gone by. Jim Galloway from the AJC, of course, is with me as usual. We're very happy to have back Randy Evans. Randy, of course, is a key player in the Republican Party, and especially consequential right now because he'll be moving toward the Rules Committee meeting where he's a prominent member and working on rules that may or may not allow the Dump Trump movement to get a foothold as the convention moves forward. But he's also a very close advisor to Newt Gingrich. We want to talk about that. And Beth Shapiro, former Democratic pollster and strategist, retired now but still hanging on. You're watching politics every day, Beth. And so thank you for being here, too.
Thank you.
So we're going to get to the convention. We're going to get to Newt Gingrich and his future. But we obviously have to start with the murders in Dallas last night and the deaths of the two black men in Minnesota and in Louisiana and talk about that. Before we turn to the panel, let's listen to Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, who made a statement at the Department of Justice about 2+ hours ago. Let's just listen to a little bit of what she said.
And to all Americans, I ask you, I implore you, do not let this week precipitate a new normal in this country. I ask you to turn to each other, not against each other, as we move forward. Let us support one another. Let us help heal one another. And I urge you to remember, today and every day, that we are one nation, we are one people, and we stand together.
Loretta Lynch. Jim Galloway, I thought that Dan Balls of the Washington Post said it just about right, and it's a good way to start, with his lead in today's post of his story. He said this was to have been a celebratory month, a time when the two major political parties nominate their presidential candidates amid pageantry and expressions of optimism and unity. Instead, July has begun with violence of the worst kind and with shock and horror and an escalation of racial tensions. Both of these parties, both in their conventions and throughout the campaign, are going to have to find a way to talk about this and offer the American people some hope of a solution.
Right, right. And we've got the conventions coming close up. I mean, you'll have Republicans start to flow into Cleveland on Monday for these rules and platform committee meetings. And then Democrats follow 2 weeks after that. I think you're going to see security ratcheted up incredibly in both Philadelphia and Cleveland. But I will tell you what, I'm seeing some very smart reactions to this. I mean, there's, you know, in years past, something like what happened in Dallas, where 5 officers were killed, 7 wounded, that would have shut off discussion of 2 black men killed by white cops in Louisiana and Minnesota. And just before we came on air, I got an email from the Republican National Committee with its official statement. And it essentially tied all 3 events together, that you cannot and basically it was an admission that you cannot discuss one without discussing the other two. And I thought that was incredibly smart.
Randy, you're going to be in Cleveland. First of all, you're going to be one of the people like a Jim Galloway who are going to deal with concerns about security. But beyond that, what's the message? How does the Republican Party offer hope to all of us?
Well, I think we're seeing the consequences of politics of division, which is when you start to think back about it, the moment we started with the idea of micro-targeting voters based on everything from ethnicity to race to religion and started dividing and conquering that way, you literally created or removed the concept of indivisible. And I think the solution has to be to move back toward the idea that we all come together. And we have to come together using principles and thoughts that circle not on what makes us different, but what makes us the same. I think you're going to see the Republican Party at least offer solutions that are designed around the concept of a meritocracy. I think that's the best thing that Donald Trump will be able to bring to bear, which is it's a meritocracy, that America operates based on succeeding and winning and making America great again, as opposed to what particular subgroup you might be a part of. But when you constantly hit these buttons, you can expect that eventually things are going to get sore.
So, Beth, I want to give you a chance to respond and tell Randy why. Because, Randy, what you're suggesting is that this is the Democrats who...
No. I think it's okay.
Both parties. All right, fair enough. I'm glad you explained that.
Both parties have done it.
Okay.
And a good example of that, Bill, is just look at just the gerrymandering.
That was exactly what I wanted to talk about, and I was going to give Beth the chance. Beth?
I couldn't agree more about the need to... perhaps we start this in 2012 when we reapportion and redistrict the state, and we begin to develop districts that don't pack people together based on a variety of demographics. I want to come back though to kind of messaging and what each party is saying, and I'm very heartened to hear that some of the spokespeople, the RNC in particular, for the Republican Party, are going beyond thoughts and prayers and into a conversation that acknowledges that black lives do matter. And because as I was thinking about this on the way over, I was thinking that I'd like to propose a radical notion to both parties. And that was my radical notion for the Republican Party. And I'm glad to hear that the conversation is shifting somewhat or can be shifting. My request of my fellow Democrats, and I'm going to catch a lot of heat for this, but I will offer it anyway, is let's not immediately go to guns, because the minute that we do, we then elicit a knee-jerk response from the NRA, from Second Amendment true believers, and the conversation just stops, because then we're all embroiled in a gun conversation. And so what I would like to see following this awful week that we've experienced as a country is that we find new ways to talk about what's gone on, that we find new ways to begin a conversation across the great divides that we have. And the gun conversation will continue, but we don't need to go there by default.
You're going to have some of that conversation happen in Florida over the next 2-3 days, because the Democratic National Committee platform people, are co-chaired by Shirley Franklin, are going to be kind of putting out a finalized version of this. And there was already going to be a heavy discussion with the Black Lives Matter people. And I think that discussion just got a little more nuanced.
You know, and I'll open this up to everybody, but let me read something and then play something and we'll talk. You know, you use the expression knee-jerk. And one of the things that's been really, I suppose, heartening in the aftermath of all of the violence of this week has been that the parties have not retreated into their typical corners. And what I mean by that, for instance, is Donald Trump, Randy, is getting a good amount of credit today because the tweet that he sent out about Dallas obviously expressed sympathy for the families of the police officers who were killed. But he also says that calls the deaths of the two black men in Louisiana and Minnesota senseless deaths. It was a considered, this was the best kind of comment we've heard from Donald Trump throughout this campaign. He didn't say, I told you this was going to happen. This obviously is an opportunity for him to establish a whole new identity.
Yeah, I mean, the whole purpose of the conventions is to introduce the candidates, and despite the caricatures that have been created by the media leading up to the conventions, and I think, you know, this is probably a reflection of the type of campaign that Donald Trump will run, you know, following Cleveland. But on the other hand, I firmly believe we're just in the middle of a transformation of the electorate. the issues that were imported in the 1900s are not the issues that are going to drive elections in the new millennia. It's the same way the issues in the 1800s didn't drive elections in the 1900s. And you're starting to increasingly see, and that's why I think, you know, I think Newt has a great illustration, which is he says, this election, more likely than not, will not be a red versus blue election. It will be a yellow versus green election.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, which is that increasingly issues unrelated to the core issues that drove virtually every election since 1980, is it going to be the issues that drive this election?
Let's listen to what your friend Newt Gingrich said just this morning, I think, Jim, because, Jim, you called this to our attention in response to the shootings of this week. Here's just a short portion of his speech.
It took me a long time and a number of people talking to me over the years to begin to get a sense of this. If you are a normal white American, the truth is you don't understand being black in America, and you instinctively underestimate the level of discrimination and the level of additional risk. If you're an African American, you are, you know, raising your teenage boys to be very careful in obeying the police because they're literally, their lives are at risk and they can see it on television. At the same time, if you are a normal Caucasian, you don't see that. That's not part of your experience.
That's Newt Gingrich just today, I think, Jim.
That's today.
So respond, react to what you hear from
Newt. You know, I was telling Randy before we went on air. That's the Newt Gingrich I remember from about 1974.
In what way?
In that he was bringing that philosophy even then to a very segregated South. He was just a fresh faced professor over at West Georgia at the time. I don't think it was even a university then. It was still a college, wasn't
that's
it?
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Beth, it's interesting because Newt Gingrich's rhetoric really goes hand in hand with a very angry op-ed piece that Michael Eric Dyson filed for the New York Times. It'll be in the print edition on Sunday, but it's already online. He's an African-American sociology professor, and he wrote, "It is clear that you, white America, will never understand us. We're a nation of nearly 40 million black souls inside of a nation of more than 320 million. You will never understand the helplessness we feel in watching these events unfold violently time and again." And he goes on. Now, he wrote this and filed it before Dallas. And it'll be interesting to see what the Times, how the Times positions this in their print edition against the Dallas story.
Well, I think that it's a very powerful piece, and I would recommend that everyone read it. And there may be a part you disagree with, there may be parts you don't like, but I think it's important for white people to begin to read and hear what black Americans are saying. You know, I'm struck. I'm sitting around the table with three white guys, and Randy actually has a very good story to illustrate this. You guys get dressed in the morning, go out, get in your cars, and go out in the world, and you don't have to think at all about how you're dressed or where you're going or whether or not the taillight might be out on your car, because you don't grow up with the fear that law enforcement is out to get you. And I think it's important that white people begin to understand that that's not the reality for black people, particularly black men in this country.
Randy, do you want to tell your story?
Sure. What we talked about was that when I was in high school, one of my best friends was African American, and we hung out all together, and we were driving to Daytona to go to the beach for spring break, and it was about 2 a.m, and we got pulled over in Alabama, and my friend turns to me, and he says, "Quick, stick your arms out the window," and I said, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "Stick your arms out the window," and I said, "For real? What's this about?" He says, "I want you to stick your arms out the window so they know one of us is white." And then I realized at that very moment I would never know. I would have never even thought of that in a million years, and yet it was instinctive for him. Now, I went on to conclude that it extended well beyond just race. I would never know what it's like to have a baby. You can read every book, watch every video, but if you've never had a child, you're not going to know what that feels like. Or you can literally go down the list from gender to race to religion, ethnicity, and it's why diversity is so important. But it's also what made the country great was the ability to to combine into, you know, e pluribus unum, out of many into one. We just haven't succeeded.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, I think one of the you had this shooter in Dallas, a fellow named Micah Johnson, 25 years old. We don't know whether there were other shooters, but we know there was at least one. He kills five officers, wounds seven, and yet he did something else too. He really silenced one of the most eloquent moments that I have ever seen on the internet. You had this Diamond Reynolds in a car in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. She and her boyfriend had been stopped by a cop. He was on the her boyfriend was on the passenger side. She turns Facebook live stream on, and her boyfriend is dying. He's been shot four times. She is very calm. She is coolly presenting this moment. She is speaking, as Beth said, she's doing everything she ought to be doing as a black woman, and keeping her cool. Just it was one of the bravest moments I've ever seen.
And I think by this time so many people have seen it, and if you haven't, you really need to go out to YouTube. And it was painful.
I think Micah Johnson just stole that moment from this woman,
because that moment is a perfect illustration of the point we were just making, which is that it was so instinctive to her to remain calm, to keep the situation from escalating, to use the phrase sir, to stick to the facts that he has a permit to carry a weapon, and even doing all those things right, we still end up with a tragic situation. But it was just an illustration of how instinctive that behavior is to black Americans.
Randy, I would argue that really I don't think Jim's quite right. I don't think the shooting in Dallas last night has erased the potency of her testimony in that horrendous situation, because I think it was that and the clear problems that we saw in the Louisiana video, shooting in that video, that have led people like your friend Newt and Donald Trump to be a little bit more tempered in how they're talking about the balance between these incidents. Yes? Yep. No?
Well, first of all,
come on, take my side.
No, I'm still stunned at this idea that Jim might not be right. I mean, it's actually something I never thought about, the possibility existing. But I agree, because I think Newt and Donald Trump and others recognize that we're sitting on a powder keg here. There's not much more escalation that can happen.
Well, and if I can, let me interrupt you long enough, and then you can keep on. So that, you know, lest we create the impression that all of a sudden we're living in a world of peace and harmony in this country, if you look at the front page of Drudge, the Drudge Report, Matt Drudge will not let us forget what's going on. He has a screaming headline: Black Power Group Claims Responsibility, Warns of More Assassinations, Five Cops Shot Dead, Suspect Wanted to Kill White People. Matt Drudge isn't forgetting how to divide Americans, Randy.
I agree, and I suspect that there are many political consultants right now doing the calculus to figure out how to mathematically take advantage of the situation for whatever cause or party or candidate they have. But that's why I started the program by saying I think that's part of the problem, this idea of politics of division, which is dividing us based on demographic issues rather than based on values or agendas for the future, or your own personal pursuit of the American dream, is where we've kind of gotten off key.
All right,
but we also have the presumptive nominee of a major party who is trafficking in those divisions, and we'll talk more about that, I think, as the show.
That's right, and I think we need to, Jim, to come back and give you a props for what you said. It isn't as if there isn't evidence to support some of your language. Corey A. Stewart, who is running for Virginia governor in 2017, posted a story about the Dallas murders and said this: liberal politicians who label police as racists, specifically Hillary Clinton and Virginia Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam, who's his opponent, are to blame for essentially encouraging the murder of these police officers tonight.
Oh, yeah. And you've had the former congressman in Illinois, Joe Walsh, say something even worse.
Yeah.
And it's going to get in certain quarters. It's going to get ugly out there for the next several months.
I think that most of us are capable of holding more than one thought at once, and they're not mutually exclusive thoughts. To think that we can respect the police, we can grieve when they are violently taken from us in the line of duty, but we can also be troubled by police overreach. And I think that's a point that I was trying to get to before, is this is a nuanced conversation, and it covers a lot of territory. And I think that it's important that our elected officials, in particular, candidates for office, clergy as well, because I think they play such a major role in how we shape public discourse, that we start to look at the different dimensions of this and not immediately go to corners and make it anti-cop, pro-cop, anti-black, pro-black. I think that we can find
well,
some
and that takes
to come
me
together.
Back to a question, Beth. Thank you for allowing me to bring it up now, because before we take a break, I want to go back, Randy, to what I started with. What do you imagine as Republicans gather, the platform committee gets set to make decisions about the content of the platform, as Republicans, as Donald Trump and his campaign look at speakers and the messaging? What is your advice going to be? You've gotten to know Trump. What's your advice going to be as to how the party responds in the week ahead and the weeks ahead on this?
Well, I think it's going to be what I talked about, which is the concept of empowerment. I won't be surprised to see Donald Trump go to the south side of Chicago and say, you have two futures. The Democratic Party wants to give you another check. I want to give you a job. I want you to have a job so that you can buy a house, you can have your kids schooled wherever you want to take them to school, where you can get a car, where you can have a great future. The real question for you is, do you want another check or do you want a better future? And I think, because so much of this has become institutional, that I do expect that there'll be protests and there'll be riots and there'll be, because there's a lot of people who have vested interest in perpetuating the current system and taking full advantage of it, both on the political side and in terms of making money.
Jim, I'm going to give you the last word before the break.
Okay, to your point, if I were booking the Republican National Convention right now, first day, I would have David Brown, the Dallas police chief, on the stage.
Yeah. Randy's taking a note there. All right, look, we have a lot more to talk about, including the Republican convention coming up. Is Newt Gingrich going to be the vice presidential candidate? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe Randy Evans will give us some insights about that, but he'll also be able to share with us his thoughts about whether the Dump Trump movement is going to get any kind of leverage in terms of trying to find a maneuver that will keep him from being the nominee. You're listening to Political Rewind at 3:29. Back in a minute.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV? GPB's vehicle donation program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227, and thanks so much.
You're listening to Political Rewind on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, offering 55 undergraduate and graduate degree programs in more than 250 fields of study.
A lot more to talk about on Political Rewind this afternoon. I'm Bill Nigut. Jim Galloway is with me, as usual. By the way, Jim, quick preview. What are we going to read in your column on Sunday in the AJC?
I am writing about Diamond Reynolds,
the woman in
Falcon Heights.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. Jim, of course, has his column in the hardcover. In the print edition.
Not so much hardcover
right,
anymore.
The print edition of the AJC on Thursdays and Sundays, and is online with Political Insider. He oversees that blog every day. Beth Shapiro, retired Democratic political consultant and pollster.
I love hearing that word, retired.
Retired. It must be nice, yeah. And Randy Evans, a key player coming up in the weeks ahead. He has been already in the whatever might happen with the Rules Committee at the Republican National Convention. And he's been, I think, Randy, you've been pretty involved in talking with your friend Newt Gingrich about how he's positioning himself in relation to Donald Trump. Is that a fair statement?
Well, certainly we talk about Donald Trump. I'm not sure about positioning himself one way or the other. I don't know that there's really an effective way that you would position yourself in Trump world one way or the other. You know, he's well documented in the media already. I mean, he's being considered and being vetted for VP. I've consistently said I thought he had a 1 in 3 chance. That means 2 out of 3 times he doesn't get picked and 1 out of 3 does. He certainly brings a lot to the table. The biggest thing that I think is everybody wants to talk about, well, he was in line to be president before. He was third in line, and he reformed welfare, and he balanced the budget, and he's been the speaker. But I think the bigger thing that he does is that currently Donald Trump's polling in the low 70s among Republicans. And to win, you've got to win your party, and you got to win in the 90s. You know, Mitt Romney was at 92, I think. And I think if Trump picked Newt, you would see that number immediately jump from 70 to 90.
You know, the VP sweepstakes are always the worst possible guessing game that a journalist can play. I think Jim's frowning at me a little bit, but you try to avoid it, I think, at all costs, right?
Yeah, and especially like Randy said, I don't know enough about how Donald Trump makes his decisions. To anticipate what his choices are.
Well, let's listen. You know, Newt, of course, campaigned with Donald Trump. He was one of several potential running mates who have been kind of trying out with Donald Trump on the stump. They were in Cincinnati together, Newt Gingrich and Donald Trump. Just a little bit about what happened when the crowd started cheering for Newt.
We like Newt. And I'll tell you what. Newt has been my friend for a long time. And I'm not saying anything, and I'm not telling even Newt anything, but I can tell you, in one form or another, Newt Gingrich is going to be involved with our government. That I can tell you. Okay? He's going to be involved. He's smart. He's tough. He gets it. And he says, I'm the biggest thing he's ever seen in the history of politics, and I'm. Now, Newt's going to be involved if I can get approval from his wife. That may be tough, but that's okay.
Okay, Jim, read those tea leaves. Although I must, before you do, say the order in which Trump placed the qualifications, I thought was all wrong based on what we've heard. Number one is he thinks I'm the biggest thing that's ever happened in politics.
He's slipping.
Number one. No, I'll address the pay issue. I'm wondering what position out there is worthy of Newt Gingrich getting back into public life. But I will tell you, I still think it gets down to personalities. Newt is a very strong personality. A former House Speaker does not like to be told what to do and when to do it. He is not, and I think he has said this, he is not a guy for funerals.
Yeah, Randy, yeah. You know him better than anyone here. What about that? Could he deal with Donald Trump's strong personality and stubbornness about what he wants to do?
Yeah, because I think in many ways they're very much alike, both in terms of their style. Listen, I was on the bus with him in 2012. People think Donald Trump is unpredictable. Newt was just as unpredictable. I mean, I still remember the cringe that I had when he said we were going to put a colony on the moon within a decade. But the fact of the matter is, I think they actually really like each other. Trump really likes Newt. He likes how much he knows. He likes the intellect. And he likes that he's been on Capitol Hill. But I also know that Trump's kids and his wife play a very important role in all decision making. So I don't think it will just be Donald Trump making the call.
Who do you think are the top alternatives?
Well, certainly Governor Pence out of Indiana probably has got to be pretty high on the list. I think General Flynn is pretty high on the list. So I think you know.
In each of those cases, there's no Washington there.
That's right. And I think the tough part is just making, you know, rarely, I don't think Hillary's pick is going to make or break her. I really don't. I mean, she is a well-known enough candidate that it's just not going to, I mean, it's just going to be about the future of the party. But for Trump, I think the VP pick could be make or break.
Beth?
I hate to throw cold water on this Newt Gingrich love fest, but I'd like to offer a minority view, at least in this room.
Wait. Have you endorsed Newt Galloway?
No, just all of the wonderful qualities that we're hearing that he would bring to the ticket. He would also bring his very polarizing personality, and I think it would be Donald Trump doubling down on polarizing. The same would be true if he selected someone like Chris Christie, who apparently is not in the running much anymore. Perhaps it's slight, but I think problem that Gingrich brings is his ethics reprimand when he was Speaker. And if Trump is going to be disciplined enough, and I know we don't use those two words in the same sentence often, but if he's going to be disciplined enough to stick with his crooked Hillary theme, then putting somebody on the ticket with him who has an ethics reprimand on his resume when he was Speaker of the House, the third most important person in the country, that could be stepping on his message.
The other thing is, I believe it would be the oldest ticket, presidential ticket in the history of the U.S.
So, you know what? That's interesting. And here's the other thing. Randy, I'll throw this your way. In the political world of political pundits, there's been talk that one of the downsides of Newt Gingrich is that he, like Trump, has had several marriages, and that could hurt him. But is it the reality that if you're a Democrat, if you're Hillary Clinton and her people, you're walking into dangerous territory if you start talking about marriage and faithfulness and devotion to a spouse?
I just don't think those kind of issues are going to drive this election. I really don't. I don't think those issues are going to drive, it's like Ronald Reagan. I remember the big thing is, oh, he's been married before. It could never be the Republican nominee in 1980.
But people had begun getting divorced then.
That's right. So my point being, that's why I think that we're in a period of transition in the electorate, which is literally we're in a moment where, the things that are important right now, people are scared. They don't have jobs. They haven't gotten a pay increase. And the world seems to be falling apart around them. The very beginning half hour of this show illustrates just how bad things have gotten. And I think they're going to try to figure out, how do we get out of this? How do we move forward?
Let's one other thing about Newt Gingrich, Beth. I was a little, Randy a little while ago said Newt is perhaps even more unpredictable than Donald Trump. You never quite know what's going to come out of his mouth. He made a statement the other day that as a journalist, I mean, it wasn't as if I was shocked by it. I was surprised by how open he was in making it. He essentially said, it's very important to Donald Trump's strategy to continue to call the media liars because he is trying to drive down people's faith in journalism. Well, people's faith in journalism.
I'm not sure how much further you could drive
it down. That's exactly right. But the fact that he would say that transparently and say, well, it's part of our strategy. We want people to think journalists are liars and that everything they say is untrustworthy. To me, this is like attacking again the institution of journalism, which for an awfully long time has been an important part of who we are as Americans.
Yeah, I'm reminded of Lester Maddox saying those darn Atlanta newspapers print every stupid thing I say, and I guess this is an alternative way around that problem. If you try to drive down belief in what newspapers and TV stations say, then maybe your stuff doesn't sound quite so stupid.
Do you want to weigh in on that?
I don't know that you need to spend your time driving down the media because we appear to have sorted ourselves into ways that we only follow the media of whatever our persuasion is. So if we're Republicans, we read Fox or Drudge Report or follow Twitter feeds of Republican-oriented outlets. Democrats do the same in terms of what, in general, we tend to follow. So, I think we believe the outlets that we turn to, and we just don't believe the outlets that our perceived opponents turn to.
All right, thank you.
But I will say this: if you're the one responsible for negotiating Newt's contract with Fox News, having someone who is completely unpredictable is an enormous asset because he's what they call a surf stopper. Yeah. So in the television business, there are two kinds. There are surf starters, which means you're watching them when they come on, you start surfing, and there are surf stoppers, which is you're flipping through and you see no, you stop, and the reason everybody stops is why. They have no idea what he's going to say.
Which is why everybody watches the Trump rallies endlessly and why the media feels they have to carry him. That's right. We should also point out when Randy said that, I forgot to mention he's Newt's lawyer, so he understands this sort of thing very well. Jim Galloway, one of the reasons that we thought it would be especially great to have Randy come on the show this week is that he'll play a key role in the Rules Committee at the Republican Convention. And we had thought, I think, that we'd probably start talking about that at the beginning of the show. But obviously, events of the week have taken us in a different direction. But this is a good time to talk about just that, the Dump Trump movement.
Okay. All right. All right, Randy. Right. Last time you and I talked, the Rules Committee has 110, 112 members. You figure that a minority report requires 28 votes. That minority report would make it to the House floor and give the whole House floor the convention floor a chance to redefine the obligations of a delegate. So is that going to happen in Cleveland?
No,
28 votes.
No, I don't think so. I think the most they're going to get, based on our whip counts, I think you're looking at a vote of about 92 to 18. On the conscientious objection issue. I think, there'll be a miscellaneous other, what I call housekeeping rules changes, and some of those will rise and some of them will fail. But I think in terms of the overall 110, 112 convention rules committee, we're not going to get a minority report, and they're not going to get through the rule that they want to unbind delegates.
Yeah, that's the only hope that the dump Trumpers have is to unbind delegates from their commitment to Donald Trump and give them freedom.
Well, I think they've got a couple other even longer shots there. I think there's a court. Somebody is dallying with a court suit there are state regulations that bind delegates, and they'll be trying to break those as well, I think.
Randy, Ted Cruz is taking himself out of the picture in the last day also. He's now said, don't turn to me, which really, it seems to me, breaks the back of those who want to find an alternative, since Cruz would be the likely place they might go, right?
Yeah, no, I think all of the momentum over the last 3 to 4 days has been toward a consolidation of power, really, in the RNC and the Trump delegates. And so I think you're going to see, I think there's going to be protests and efforts made, of course. Do I think the Rules Committee meeting on Thursday and Friday is going to be long and contentious? Absolutely. But I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to having the votes. You either do have the votes or you don't have the votes. And having chaired my fair share of conventions, that's what, at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to.
All right, let's take our final break of the show. When we come back, we've got to talk Hillary Clinton because there's an awful lot happening there as well. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB, and a number of you already have been. I appreciate that. Ted Barfield has been really active. He says the media's constant emphasis on racial identities and motives is a problem. We didn't discuss that. Perhaps he's right. Ted Barfield also said that Trump is right. All of these deaths have been senseless. Sam Burnham asked us to remember how well the Dallas Police Department and Dallas protesters handled a terrible situation the other last night. So tweet us at PoliticsGPB and join the conversation. You're listening to Political Rewind. It's 3:45. We'll be back in a minute.
In Dallas, snipers aimed their weapons at police near the end of a rally that had been peaceful. People were in the streets to protest the shootings of two black men by police this week. Now several officers are dead and more wounded. We'll bring you the latest from Dallas today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered this afternoon from 4 to 7 here on GPB, Georgia Public Broadcasting.
We're back on Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, Beth Shapiro, and Randy Evans are at the table today. Big week for Hillary Clinton to have to deal with. We already talked on Wednesday about the Jim Comey's report, which was so devastating in terms of its assessment of how she handled her email. And he, of course, went up to the Hill and defended his position of saying that he would not recommend her being indicted. But Republicans are hanging on to this, and they are going to continue. They've now sent a referral to the Justice Department, to the FBI, saying we need you now to investigate whether she committed perjury in any of the statements she made to you, because Comey said they hadn't looked at that. And we know now that state has decided it's going to reopen its investigation into her emails, which sort of surprised me, Jim Galloway. This is, I mean, their
No, not really. No, it had deferred its investigation while the FBI was operating. And then with Comey coming in and saying that this investigation was over, they were free to start their own. And I think the State Department is going to go after the Secretary of State? Probably not. But they could go after the security clearances of that tight circle that's around Hillary Clinton, which would deprive them of any big appointments should she win in November.
All right, to set the table, Beth, I know you want to get into it, but to set the table before we have a conversation about what all this means, our intern Caroline Hayes went over to the Silver Skillet Salon yesterday to hear what voters were thinking about what all of this has said to them about Hillary. Let's listen to what Caroline collected.
I think that what's happening now is that there are laws for the elite and there are laws for you and me.
I would still feel comfortable voting for a yes. As someone looking at the big picture of things,
everybody should be prosecuted for things that they do.
I thought there was corruption involved.
It's highly suspicious. What the FBI has said regarding Hillary is different what she's said.
She should have been charged with something, yeah.
She overall is the most well-rounded out of all the candidates. I think she would make a better president than Donald Trump.
And I don't want her to be president.
No, I do not think she'd be a good presidential candidate.
Do I think it was a great decision on her behalf? No. But from my understanding, other elected officials did the same thing and the same big deal wasn't made out of it.
So I've known about her for 25 years ago. She's been in some kind of trouble ever since she had the law firm, the Whitewater incident in Arkansas. It's always been something.
They can already hide something that easy ready. What is she going to do for our future?
That's her nature, and she's not going to change.
It's just, it's a smokescreen to just, you know, try to distract, like I said, from the main issues.
Voters at the Silver Skillet over the last few days. Beth, you wouldn't disagree that you've got a terribly flawed candidate for president, would you?
Well, if I can not answer that question.
What are you running for office?
I'll get around to an answer to it. But I just wanted to make an observation, which will lead to my bigger point.
Sure.
About the last segment, talking about the Republican convention and whether or not the dump Trump movement will succeed. I just wanted to make the observation that that's an extraordinary situation to be going into the convention of either party where there is so much unhappiness with the presumptive nominee, which leads to my larger point, which Jim Galloway made earlier this week in his column, quoting the good Dr. Alan Abramowitz at Emory University, my alma mater, which I just have to keep citing. But he talked about this whole notion of negative partisanship. And that we are so divided that Democrats will vote more are likely to vote more out of distaste for the Republican opponent, Republican candidate, as they are to vote for their candidate. The same is true for Republicans. So I think that that Hillary Clinton, whose actions I'm not crazy about, I'll give you that much of an answer. But I think that the best thing she has going for her in this election is that her opponent is Donald Trump. And that's going to unite Democrats to support her.
Randy, you want to jump in?
Well, I think at the end of the day, clearly, in fairness, I think Secretary Clinton got the worst of all worlds. I mean, I think it would have been better off if he had said, I'm going to refer it, and they sat on it till November. Or if he had said, I'm not, whatever. But the worst of all worlds was to go out and for two different days just absolutely rake her over the coals. And which leads me to what I call the brain teaser for all of us, which is to consider the possibility of what happens if Gary Johnson and the Libertarian Party or the Green Party start breaking into double digits. Mm-hmm. Most people don't.
15%. 15% is all you need. Is all you need to make it,
into the debate.
Well, I'm not even. I may actually, you know, as you can tell, always looking at the rules. But the oddity, for example, let's just take Georgia. Let's assume that nobody gets a majority over 50% on November 8th. So what happens?
Well, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, it goes into it.
It'll end up. Well, the Electoral College has an opportunity to make its electors are allowed to weigh in to vote in a way that they prefer, right, Randy?
No, I think they do. No. This is why this is a brain teaser. The electors are not elected until you have somebody has won your state. So there's a slate of Trump electors and there's a slate of Clinton electors. Now, if nobody gets a majority on November 8th, what happens then when the Electoral College meets in the first week of December?
I thought, and we're going to check this out, I thought that at that point, electors can be unbound.
There are no electors, that's my point. You have two slates. You have a slate of Clinton.
Yeah.
Who is it that will gather the first week of December to vote?
Okay.
And to further complicate the world, of course, Judge Land ruled that Georgia's federal elections have to have 45 days. So if you had a runoff, the runoff isn't until when?
Oh, that would push it into January.
Of the next year.
Yeah, right.
So literally after the Congress convenes to count the electoral votes, Georgia would then be deciding who its electors are. Now, if nobody gets to 270, what happens?
Well, then the House takes over.
That's right.
Then
the House takes over. You literally have the makings, if indeed Gary Johnson gets to 15 or 10, of the possibility that literally you have what they call the Electoral College meltdown, which is you just simply the timing doesn't work. And that's where I think these third-party candidates, if they make the debate stage and if they start to drive numbers such that you have to have a majority to win an election like you do in Georgia, it gets really complicated.
It does, and you're right. Gary Johnson is an X factor. Don't you agree, though? This has been a bad week for Hillary Clinton's campaign and a pretty good week for Donald Trump in many ways, I think. There are a lot of criticisms of how he misplayed the Comey statement and he wandered off, and he did. Nevertheless, you know, he's coming. Wouldn't you say he came out ahead of Hillary this week, Jim?
Saddam Hussein would say so.
I would say that Donald Trump took the worst week that Hillary Clinton had
and made it less bad
and made it less
all right,
bad.
But
here.
Given all that, the fact of the matter is the map right now continues to favor the election of Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump.
Right.
My point was, Randy, Donald Trump's got a long way to go to try to beat Hillary Clinton when you look at the states.
Yeah, I'd completely disagree with you. I think polling Trump is like polling Brexit. Which is, it's not politically correct to say that you're for passing Brexit. But that's actually how voters felt. They were just sick and tired of somebody in Brussels telling them what teapot they could use. And so that's consistently happened to Trump throughout the whole primary season. If you remember, week after week, we would get, here's what the numbers are going to be, and he would exceed it by large margins. So I don't know. I just wouldn't want to be a pollster this in this cycle, because I don't know how you poll it.
That's why I'm so happy to be retired.
but actually, what you're getting at the possibility that Gary Johnson could suddenly take off. I mean, the thing is that, and we get back to a best point of negative partisanship. You're voting against the American population is voting against someone this cycle. They're voting against Hillary Clinton or they're voting against Donald Trump. They're not voting for a Gary Johnson. I mean, he doesn't have a positive image there that people can flock to. There, you've got 50% of Democrats saying they're afraid of Republicans. You've got a like number of Republicans saying they're afraid of Democrats, and that's what's going to drive this thing.
And you've also got coming back to the House hearing. It was just yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. The House hearing. You've also got Republicans who have shown an ability in the past to overreach. who may well do that again. They're going. There was talk of having a hearing with Attorney General Loretta Lynch next week.
Yeah, she'll be there.
And so I think that every time the Republicans in Congress take steps like this, it just agitates the Democratic base even more.
Well,
and the Republican base is already agitated enough over Hillary Clinton, so that by November, you're going to have the intense partisanship driving the kind of turnout that I think ultimately is going to help.
Well, you also have just think about the almost insanity of it. The Republican nominee has run against the Congress, which is controlled by the Republicans. So literally, that's why I say this is going to be such a transformative, hard to poll election, because on the one hand, Trump's going to say, "I'm going to go in there and fix it. Washington D.C. is broken." But on the flip side, how the House Republicans are going to say, "Reelect us," it's going to be crazy.
All right, we have so much more we could talk about. Trump's visit to the Hill yesterday, in which he did so well in the House, people say, and then so poorly in the Senate, attacking those people who have not jumped on his bandwagon yet. We could talk more about the fact that Paul Ryan has now said that Hillary Clinton should be denied access to security briefings, even once she's the nominee. I mean, this is going to go on, and we will get to all of it in the weeks ahead. But in the meantime, we're out of time for this show. Randy Evans, what a pleasure to have you here. Hey, well, you're off in Cleveland. Let's see if we can arrange a couple of days maybe to call you on the phone. And
I'd be happy to.
Join the show. And I know, Jim Galloway, you're heading to Cleveland on Monday, and you're going to start filing reports on the Rules Committee and the Platform Committee, right?
Right. I think I'll miss the first few hours of the Platform Committee.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but you'll be there, and I know we'll be hearing from you and Beth Shapiro. You and I are both staying right here in Atlanta.
I'll just be sitting here reading Galloway's post.
Boy, is it nice not to have to travel anymore. All right.
One word, pierogies. It's worth it.
And Philly cheesesteaks on top of it week after. That's it for us for today's show. My thanks to our terrific interns, Hannah Rose Adams and Caroline Hayes. Caroline, great job gathering that sound. I know Trevor Young, our new associate producer, was very helpful in that regard, and he's running the board today. Glad to have him here. And the always wonderful senior producer of Political Rewind, Jenny Ament, is with us again today. Thanks for all you do, Jenny. I'm Bill Nygut. We will be back next Wednesday with another edition of Political Rewind. We just noticed that the ratings for this show have just taken off, and I can't tell you how happy I am that all of you out there like listening to us, even if we sometimes make you really angry. So please keep listening. We'll see you next Wednesday at 2:00.